The early lessons of the Millennium Village Project are already being taken to heart by several of the host governments, which are looking to scale up this kind of holistic, practical, community-based development program. The scale-up will come in four ways. First, some of the key interventions, such as mass distribution of antimalarial bed nets, will simply be introduced on a national scale, as has now happened in Ethiopia, Kenya, Niger, Togo, and a growing list of other countries. Second, the existing village areas will expand their coverage from around 50,000 people per cluster to a full district of perhaps 10 times that size. Third, clusters of Millennium Villages will be introduced in districts throughout each country, donor support permitting. And finally, countries not yet part of the project are asking to join. There are 13 countries with Millennium Villages as of 2007, and several more countries planning to join by 2008. I hope that by 2010, nearly all countries in sub-Saharan Africa will have similar programs. As usual, the limiting factor is donor resources. The project itself requires $60 per villager per year for 5 years. This amount falls squarely within the aid levels promised, but not yet delivered, by the G8. At the 2005 summit in Gleneagles, Scotland, the G8 countries promised to reach $50 billion per year in aid for Africa by 2010, doubling the aid level of 2004. With roughly 500 million Africans living in rural villages, and with each villager targeted to receive assistance of $50 per year, the total cost of expanding the Millennium Village strategy across rural Africa is about $25 billion per year, or roughly half of the promised G8 aid. The limiting factor, therefore, is not the lack of potential financing. It has already been promised. If the powerful countries follow through on their commitments, we could make decisive progress against extreme poverty in a very short period of time. The Millennium Villages concept, brought to scale and combined with other worthy initiatives on agriculture, health, education, infrastructure, and private sector development, can yet make a difference in achieving the Millennium Development Goals. Today's winners and past help. How soon they forget might as well be the rallying cry of foreign assistance. Most successful countries, including most of today's donor countries, required outside donor help at critical moments in their histories. An irate emailer once attacked me for promoting help for Africa when his model country, Israel, had clearly made it on its own. Little did this gentleman realize that U.S. aid to Israel, with a population roughly 1/100th of Africa's, has been roughly equal to American aid to all of Africa. I am often told, in a similar vein, that India, Korea, and Taiwan each made it on their own, without an understanding that U.S. foreign assistance in the 1950s and 1960s, as well as investments by Japan, set the stage for their later economic development. And, of course, today's European donors were themselves Marshall Plan recipients, with an average annual grant in the Marshall Plan countries of around $85 per European per year in 2004 dollars during the late 1940s and early 1950s. Interestingly, the Marshall Plan's $85 per recipient is close to what the G8 has promised, but not yet delivered, to sub-Saharan Africa, since the promised $50 billion would be divided among roughly 600 million recipients. The cases of Korea, India, and Taiwan are especially pertinent because simplistic and invidious comparisons are often made between these successful economies and the impoverished economies of Africa. For example, Korea and Taiwan are often compared pointedly with Ghana, with the assertion that all three economies had roughly the same starting point in 1960, so the subsequent divergence in performance was homegrown and due to better economic governance and management in Asia. In fact, the economic takeoff of Korea and Taiwan in the 1960s was built on foundations laid by Japanese investments during the colonial era and by infrastructure financed by U.S. aid in the late 1950s and early 1960s. Most important, and without downplaying the darker sides of colonial rule, Japanese policies and investments laid the foundation for high productivity agriculture in both Korea and Taiwan, and thereby laid the foundations for food security and industrialization.